Now that the game is done, it's our time to check in.
It is now a 19-2 run for the Celtics. 19-2. And the Bucks need to find a way to get some life support.
Bucks Talk starts now.
And Doc Rivers with 2:44 to play here in this fourth quarter will wave the white flag with Boston now ahead by their largest lead of 15.
Live from the Annex Wealth Management Studios, here's Justin Garcia and Brandon Snide.
Well, a disappointing result tonight in Boston, and the Bucks now 1-3 to start the season. That schedule does not get any easier against the Memphis Grizzlies on the road Thursday night. Two games against the Cavaliers immediately after that. You still got one more against the Celtics and one against the Knicks in your first 10 games of the season. I mean, you circled the Bulls game, the Jazz game, which you have yet to play. That comes your way next week at home. And, of course, last night against the Brooklyn Nets as, look, these first 10 games are tough. So let's assume we win these three. If you go 3-4, fine. You got a 6-4 start through a very difficult stretch of games. If you go 4-3 or better, hey, even better. But it's not the case. And I know last night I said, look, I expect the Bucks to win this game because it's kind of what we've seen from this group, that I don't know if playing to the level of their competition is exactly what we're seeing, but you've seen them up to the challenge in those types of games. Even the three games last year against the Boston Celtics, those two losses, I should say, the four games, two losses, they played them tough. And especially knowing how things went last night against the Brooklyn Nets, you knew it was going to be a much different team. And that's what we saw for three quarters of this game. I think Doc Rivers reaffirmed that as well. The issue was the third quarter. And therein lies the problem all season long. It has been a horrendous 12 minutes for the Bucks throughout the course of this season. You're not afforded those luxuries against a team like the Boston Celtics. You cannot miss open shots. You can't turn the ball over, even if you're matching them. And that was really the case. I mean, the Bucks outscored them in the paint. Turnovers, sure, we've seen the Bucks have more. And the Celtics were essentially even with the Bucks in terms of their turnovers. But you can't play even with this team. You have to win on the margins. And I know it doesn't explain everything, but you are not going to win very many, if any, games in this league when you are outscored on threes by 30 or more points, especially against this Boston Celtics team. 855-616-1620 is the number to join us tonight in Bucks Talk, and I fully expect there is going to be quite a few of you that are out there on the ledge that have not only hovered over the panic button, you are firmly pressing down on it right now. You have serious questions about this team, and I think we've kind of talked about this through the first three games. I can't talk you out of that. I know what we've seen last year is going to add to that. I can't do anything to sell you on why we need to be patient and we'll see things. You saw for three quarters, but again, Celtics aren't a team you can play three quarters against and get by. Brandon, I'm assuming you have much stronger takes than I do on what we saw tonight. So,
what makes you think that, Justin?
Go ahead and unload.
I'm actually going to surprise you a little bit tonight. I'm not as upset about tonight's loss as I probably thought I would have been, especially looking at that final box score. I thought really for the Bucks, the first quarter kind of set the tone early, especially in that first half. Boston unable to really hit anything. Slow start for them. And Giannis, I've been talking about it, man. I just want to see a little bit more of a, you know, assertiveness on his end. And he set the tone early for the Bucks. 9 early points. But on the flip side, you let Pritchard kind of find his way late in that first quarter. I think he finished with 8. But I thought overall, Justin, for the second leg of a back-to-back, I really thought that the Bucks responded a lot better than I thought they were going to. I mean, they get jumping on loose balls, forcing a couple turnovers. You know, I think Look, I mean, I think it was on display tonight that the talent disparity between Boston and Milwaukee might be a lot larger than I think you and I maybe thought. Because I was in the agreeance with you that the Bucks played them good last year. I mean, they split the series two games apiece. Both those losses came at Boston for the Bucks and by a combined 7 points. And I would assume that it would have been a tougher, closer matchup tonight. The Bucks, in my opinion, were an upgraded roster. But on an off night for Tatum, really, in an off night, I mean, Jaylen Brown had his. But for an off night for Jason Tatum, you would think that it would be a closer game than a 119-108 final. And I know that doesn't really tell the whole story because of a couple late threes there by the Bucks. But the biggest thing with this one was Pritchard made as many threes as the Bucks did the entire game. I mean, that's your difference. You just can't allow those things to happen. They're going to happen. They just lost him too many times in transition. They're over-helping, it looks like. And, you know, that. I mean, 8 three-pointers, 28 points in 28 minutes for Peyton Pritchard. I know whatever game the Celtics play, just bet the under on whatever his total is going to be, because it's only against the Bucks that this stuff kind of happens, just like we saw with Kobe White on Friday.
It's not only against the Bucks. He's been very
good.
But
it's you're right. It happens, but it's not – he's not dropping 28 in 28 minutes against every other team in the NBA. He's a Buck killer. I mean, he is. He's a Buck killer. So for tonight's word of the game, Justin, can you guess where I'm going to go with this one?
No.
Simple, just frustrating, because I felt like this team played better. I felt like the energy was a little bit better than what we have seen in the last two games. I really like seeing Andre Jackson Jr. early. I believe it was in that second quarter after Doc watched Pat Connaughton try to chase Pritchard around. And I thought the Bucks finally did what I have been telling you that they need to do, and is play with their size. I thought Brook Lopez was good in the paint, a couple more block shots. I think he finished with 4. Giannis, you know, has back to the basket a little bit more. So I thought that they used their size. Look, it's a tale of two halves for the Celtics from shooting, man. They were ice cold, really, in that first quarter. Pritchard got hot late. And then they just turned it on in the second half. And, I mean, it seemed like Tony Brothers was ready to get out of there. And very interesting game that was officiated tonight.
Come on. No, this was not... Officiating didn't determine what happened in this game.
I'm not saying it did. I just said it was interesting. I didn't say anything about the officiating.
Why? I mean, it doesn't even warrant a mention. That was the least of what went wrong for the Bucks.
I mean, I would disagree with you, and I think there
officiating
times
factored
where,
into the Celtics making 10 more threes than the Bucks.
Well, no, but it killed a lot of the momentum that the Bucks were gathering late in that third quarter. I mean, there was a couple plays where
turnovers
just,
and threes are what determined this game. The officiating had nothing to do with it.
And part of the turnovers were, I thought, calls that went against the Bucks that were questionable at best. I mean, the Bucks made back-to-back stops. They got a three-pointer out of, I believe it was Gary Trent Jr., and then the next time they have another stop and they come back down, and it's Giannis and Drew in the paint, and they call an offensive foul on Giannis.
Yeah, but when you see the way the game is being officiated, you can't keep going to that. I thought Damian Lillard was very good tonight. I know Giannis had 30 points. This wasn't Giannis's best work.
No, and, I mean, just sloppy with the ball, forcing things. I mean, I agree, and it's kind of been my thing with him that I told you about Friday when they lost to Chicago. I'm frustrated with what he does at the top of the key and how he orchestrates his offensive game plan night in and night out. It's frustrating because everybody knows it's coming. And one of two things are going to happen. You're either going to get called for an offensive foul or you're going to go to the free throw line and you're going to hit 38% of your free throws. I don't like the approach, and that's why I mentioned it when they lost to Brooklyn. I just want to see the offense run through Damian Lillard. I think that's where that's where it needs to start. Again, going back to the point, I'm not blaming the referees for the Bucks losing. I mean, at all. All I'm saying was it was an interesting game and from both sides. I mean, you go scour the people that cover the Boston Celtics on social media, they'll tell you the same thing. Interesting game from Tony Brothers.
I don't know. I don't think there's anything that stood out. about the officiating in this one. I thought it was a lot of self-inflicted issues for the Bucks, and that has been the case for three games. You didn't play good against the Bulls for at least half of the game. You didn't play good for most of that game yesterday in Brooklyn against the Nets. And I mean, the reality is, and I think we touched on this a little bit last night, there are certainly, warning signs. I suppose that's what a majority are going to label this as. And again, given the way last year went, given the way the last 2 years went, I can't dispute that with you. I'm not going to be able to talk anybody out of that. But there are certainly things that have popped up that you say, uh-oh, I was kind of worried about this. But if you beat the Bulls and the Brooklyn Nets and you played like this against the Boston Celtics and lose, and you're 2-2, 3-1, even if you split those games with the Bulls and Brooklyn, but you're 2-2 and you say, okay, we at least played pretty well for at least three quarters of that game. Like, I feel good about where this is headed. And I know that was the message from Doc Rivers after the game. Trying to find his exact quote that he had about how he felt tonight. But he said, the guys feel good about where we're headed, and I don't doubt that. It's just, this is going to be the challenge, is how improved the conference is, and the fact that you're 1-3, you are staring at the possibility of a 3-7, 4-6 start to the season, which doesn't mean your season is over. But the optics of it are certainly not going to be great coming off of back-to-back first-round losses, knowing this is an older roster and some of the questions that existed with this team that, I know we kind of said you can't really afford to get off to a start like that. I mean, the reality is you may be facing that. And you don't make a season or you don't lose your spot in the playoffs in the first week of the season, but it's going to be tough. You're already three games back of the Cavs, and you got two games with them next week. Like, it could start to get very ugly very quickly if you don't get a firm grasp on this. I think there is a more positive outlook on this, which I'll share in just a moment, but I expect there's a lot of people that are panicking and jumping off the bandwagon after this performance tonight. 855-616-1620, the number to join us tonight on Bucks Talk. So what is that one shred of positivity you can look for out of this, not just from tonight's game and some of the key takeaways we have, certainly about Damian Lillard and some other pieces we'll get to, but overall, the big picture, the one piece of positivity that remains. We'll tell you what that is coming up after this on Bucks Talk.
Welcome back to Bucks Talk.
.119-108, the final in Boston. The Bucks are now 1-3. You got the Celtics 4-0. The Cavs are 4-0. I believe that's it for unbeaten teams in the East. But, suddenly if you're the Bucks, you're looking up at the Cavs. You're looking up at the Bulls. You're tied with the Pacers. You are only one game in front of the Detroit Pistons. It is certainly what I would describe as a suboptimal start to this season. 855-616-1620, the number to join us tonight on Bucks Talk. Let's head to the phone lines and check in with Dick in Port Washington. Dick, how close are you to the ledge here?
Well, I feel bad. I've called in every night. It's like I'm Debbie Downer here, but it's early. My wife keeps But I've got a concern, the same kind of as your new co-host here. I think we have to revisit this Giannis bringing the ball up, going to the hole, and just dominating the ball. We need to get the others, as Barkley and Shaq always say, the others. That's where you're going to win a lot of games. And so when he does that, he brings it to the hole, the others stand and look. Okay? Damian, throughout his career, always was the instigator. And I'm wondering now, that's the issue between him and Giannis. Not that there's a problem between the two, but there's a compatibility issue. And since we have proof over the last several years that having Giannis go to the hole and score a lot of points and not getting other people involved hasn't been working, we need to change something. And I fully agree with you guys that this team on paper is better than last year's. But as I said, probably last night, I think it was, I don't see any improvement. These guys are better players, but it's the same thing over and over.
Well, I mean, technically, there is improvement. That's the definition
of insanity, doing the same thing over and over and then expecting a different result after you have the results handed to you.
Well,
we need to change something.
So what do you suggest?
I think somehow we need to convince Giannis that he needs to play closer to the hole or play a wing. He can still drive to the hole from the side, but let Dame bring it up. They won't be able to build a wall for Giannis, will they, if he's already down there?
I mean,
what the heck are you going to build a wall on? You know,
less toll on his body.
Pardon me? And the toll on
less
his body.
Less wear and tear on his body.
Brandon, right?
That's right.
You're Brandon? Okay. I'm sorry. I'm a slow learner here. But, yeah, the body, he's 30. He can't keep doing this. He's going to eventually have to go underneath and play different. And if he goes to the wing, he can still do these moves to the hole. But put the other team at risk by having Damian bring the ball down, because then they don't know what's going to happen. If you back off of him, he's going to drop a 30-footer. If you get up on him, Giannis is going to be free, and so are some of the guys in the other wings. Let's try something different.
I don't... Thanks for the call, Dick. I don't think...
Yep.
I mean, number one, Giannis is one of the 3 to 5 best players in the league. Like, I get your point of Damian Lillard's the point guard and he should bring the ball up. I think we've seen more of that in these first 4 games on average per game than we did last year. I don't necessarily think that is the issue, and even, you know, how Giannis attacks. I mean, look, I think tonight part of it was frustration. Part of it, too, is when you're not hitting shots, your teammates are not, you're going to take that on yourself of, well, I know I can score, and I feel like I can get to the rim here, so I'm just going to do this. I do think that was part of tonight. I think the bigger piece of this, and we saw parts of this early in the season last year, is, and someone else suggested this to me, somebody that used to play in the league, part of the challenge early with new teammates with Giannis and guys that are learning him, not just new teammates, but early in this process, is because of his play style, because he can get off shots you wouldn't imagine, he can get to the paint, he knows how to work angles, and he can get to the rim and find creases and spots you didn't think exist. But at times when he shut off, then, oh, he's going to pass it, and you're not ready for it. It's a learning process because of the randomness of how he plays to figure out, where do I need to be to get the ball? What are the spots where he's going to pass the ball? And I know Torian Prince talked about that and looking at the catch-and-shoot opportunities the last couple of years. He studied that. And I think you saw it certainly in Game 1 in Philly. But let's think back to last year. I know Malik Beasley had a very good start to the season in terms of his shooting, was pretty consistent start to finish. I mean, he had a couple of games that were duds, but pretty consistent scorer and shooter throughout the course of the season. With Giannis, it took a little bit of time. I remember having this conversation on this show a year ago of, yeah, there's still moments when you can tell, like, Giannis, he doesn't know where to find bees out there on a kickout. And he has not had that connection with Gary Trent Jr. so far. I mean, one of the big issues facing this team right now, there's nothing we can do to change their athleticism and their age. You can't wave a magic wand and say, man, it'd be great if Giannis was 26 years old. It'd be great if Dame was 28, if we could just make Brooke Lopez 29 and quicker and more agile. Like, you can't do that. You need more consistent scoring. And Doc has talked about this a couple of times already this season. Doesn't matter who it is. Doesn't matter if it's a combination of guys. Without Chris Middleton, we need a consistent third score. You had it night one in Philly when it was basically a team effort. Torian Prince was in double figures. Gary Trent Jr. looked good. Bobby Portis and Pat Connaughton were both good. You haven't had anything like that since. You know, it's been either Giannis or Dame, or it's been Giannis and Dame and no one else. And I do think that's a big part of it, too, that it's going to take time for Giannis to develop that chemistry with a guy like Gary Trent Jr., and then you're going to start to see more of the volume. I mean, maybe not necessarily what he did in Toronto, but then you're going to start to see more of those moments. Once they develop that, Giannis knows where he's positioned. Gary Trent Jr. will know, I should probably move here because this is where Giannis goes when he's at the elbow, and this is going to be easier to get the kick out. Things like that take time, and I think it's especially difficult with a player like Giannis just because of some of those things. And I think that is part of what they're dealing with now. That's not the reason why they're 1-3.
Let me ask you this, Justin. Can I ask you a question?
No.
Correct me if I'm wrong. Did he not spend a summer with Olajuwon, or at least a couple of weeks with Olajuwon?
I mean, he spent time with him.
Okay. So he trained with him, correct?
I mean, I don't know what you would label it as, but he did spend time with Hakeem Olajuwon.
They spent time in the gym together. Okay. Why can't we find a healthy mix of the both? You talked about consistent scoring. How many players in today's NBA, currently, right now, can defend Giannis on the low block? I can think of maybe one consistently.
But you don't play like that anymore.
But if you're looking for easy scoring and inconsistency, you have the size and strength over 95% of the teams in the league. And why can't you play like that anymore?
Because it's not the way the game is played anymore. Like, you don't play around the basket like that. You need to create those openings. And even still, I mean, you need that balance of Giannis and Damian Lillard. We saw it tonight. Look, Giannis had 30 points. Why did you lose the game? You weren't hitting threes. Like, if the opponent is hitting threes,
tonight,
doesn't
sure.
matter if Giannis scores 60. Like, they almost lost that game. Because if you're giving up shots on the outside and you're not hitting those, that's going to be the biggest difference in the game.
I think they can find a healthy mix of Giannis penetrating, running the offense through Dame, and working Giannis down low and trying to get a few easy baskets here and there, especially on a dry spell, to either get some scoring going or stop the bleeding. I don't think just because we're saying the NBA is not run like that anymore is kind of a lazy excuse to you just don't want to do it anymore.
Who is the player that does that?
What team, Justin, has Giannis and Brooke on the front court? What team? There's not many.
I'm asking you, though, who is the player that plays like what you're suggesting Giannis do?
Bam a little bit more than...
Bam is nowhere near an offensive focal point. Bam is a facilitator.
He's not a focal point, but he play, and what does he do when he gets the ball?
He's facilitating. So you want Giannis to be the facilitator?
I think Giannis's passing is extremely underrated, to be honest with you. I think he is really good. His vision is really good. It's underrated. I think it's not the best part of his game, but I think he can.
You're picking a bad time to suggest that on a night where he had seven turnovers and is not... done a good job of protecting the ball this year.
But he attracts such a crowd, Justin. And when you surround Giannis with, I know he's kind of on my list right now, but Brooke Lopez can shoot better than most bigs. Damian Lillard, Taurean Prince, Gary Trent Jr., Pat Connaughton. Like, if you're able to run the ball, able to get the ball into the paint more often than not, he's going to find it. If he doesn't score, he's going to find somebody that's wide open for a shot. I just think we're missing an easy opportunity for a little bit more scoring, especially in during a game where, you know, they need a bucket and they can't hit a shot. I mean, Dave Kane says it on the call. The force field was over the rim tonight for deep for the Bucks. So instead of forcing up 31 three-pointers and hitting six of them at one point, why not get some easy buckets? I'm not saying that you're back into the 90s and 80s and running that type of offense.
But I guess I don't understand what these easy buckets are you're referring to.
Giannis getting the ball in the paint is an easy basket.
But you're just going to collapse the entire defense on him.
And what are you going to do when the defense collapses?
What did you do tonight when you had those looks?
But that wasn't how they created those looks tonight. Not all those looks were wide open.
They
and a lot of those
looks
came
tonight.
With... they did. But a lot of those looks, too, were coming late, 7 seconds on the shot clock, 5, 4. I mean, and they're trying to rush to get up a shot. I'm not asking them to change the offense. I'm not asking Giannis to change who he is as a player.
It sounds like you are.
I'm asking for a healthy mix. Like, it's the third time I've said it. I'm not saying change everything. He's one of the best penetrators in the game. He's a freight train coming down, you know, down the court. But he's also missed the last two postseasons, Justin, because of that type of play.
But here's the thing. Well, I mean, he didn't miss the last postseason because of that type of play.
He got hurt in Miami doing that.
I said the last postseason. He did not miss the last postseason because of that.
You're right. I honestly don't even remember how he got the calf. Oh, the calf was just running.
He was walking up the court.
Yeah. But, I mean, wear and tear. I mean, it's going to – he's a force, man. I mean, the guy is a force. And I'm telling you right now, most Bucks fans will sit there and tell you they close one eye when he drives to the rim because we're petrified of the outcome of him hit. I mean, because he doesn't get – back to the referee conversation. I know you'll love this. He doesn't get reffed the same way most players get reffed. A foul on Giannis is a flagrant one or two most nights against anybody else. And I know you may or may not disagree with that. That's how I look at it. So he's getting hit. His body is going through more than I think people realize. We're just so accustomed to it and we're seeing it that I'm asking the 30-year-old guy to just kind of, hey, get a couple bunnies, man. Get a couple bunnies. Pull Brooke out of the paint. I mean, he lives up in the perimeter anyway, and dump it off to him.
But hang on. You can't say you want the team to use their size and play through their size, right? Like, take advantage of that. And then say, Brooke, pull him away from the basket.
Well, I don't want Brooke and him down there together. That's my point. I think they have an opportunity to run both of those in sort of the same set. I mean, when you see Dame and Brooke play together, it doesn't look anything like Giannis and Dame, correct?
Because Brooke is an elite screen setter.
Okay, I mean,
where was Damian Lillard at his best in Portland? Who was the player he was best with?
Yeah, Aldridge.
Yusuf Nurkic, because he was a massive screen setter, and he opened up the paths for Damian Lillard. He would go to his left, set screens, get open looks. Brooke Lopez does that. So I think that's why Dame has been at his best with Brooke Lopez, because he's an elite screen setter, and he can get Dame those looks. That's something that Giannis needs to improve. And, like, especially if you want him to play this way. Well, especially if you want him to play that way, he's going to have to set screens.
Yeah, you're right. I'll give you that. You're right, but I think that's the big issue with the current offense that we're looking at right now. I mean, you're not going to win many games if you go 8 for 31. But
well, right, I mean that's the ultimate point. You're not going to win many games when you shoot like that
for sure.
They're going to have a handful of games like this. The big thing is, and where I'm torn is, it's very tough to assess any type of judgment on what we've seen from four games, because you still haven't seen this team at full strength, technically. Mm-hmm. But having said that, I understand the trepidation that I'm sure a lot of Bucks fans have in saying, well, can we really count on that? And look, I know we talked about it, a week or so ago, and I've been a very staunch Chris Middleton defender and supporter, and I still am. He was on pace to play in the high 60s of games, number of games last year. I mean, it's been really two sets of bad luck that have derailed 2.5 seasons for him in terms of the games played. But, you know, just like the record thing, at some point, you are what you are, and it's tough to shake that label. And people are going to look at, well, he's played X amount of games. I mean, I mentioned the games played for Chris is basically identical to the games played for Joel Embiid and Paul George the last 4 years. It's a different conversation for those guys. I mean, Chris is your third option, but still, that is not the company you want to be in when we're talking about games played and availability, because availability is the best of all the abilities that's out there. So I get it when I say, look, it's tough because this team still isn't full strength. I'm not suggesting that Chris Middleton is still the defender that he was a couple of years ago. I mean, you still have some issues there. That I think that is another thing that discouraging is probably a fair assessment of, man, there's still too many issues on the perimeter. But what really stands out is a lot of this looks different. And it doesn't even have to be the Indiana Pacers series version of Chris Middleton. Just having Chris Middleton on the floor, a lot of this looks different. A lot of the spacing looks different. Like, you're still finding spots for Torian Prince, but if you have Chris Middleton out there on one of the elbows, you have Giannis and Dame on the floor together, you have Brook Lopez and Gary Trent Jr. as the other options, that's going to create some more openings. And that's going to make the offense look better, I have to believe. It's going to lead to more than 8 3-pointers in a game. But if you, and I'm not saying you personally, but if you choose to say, yeah, I just don't believe that's going to be the case because I've seen through the last 2+ years, he's played an X amount of games, so why should I believe it'll change? Like, fine, I can't convince you otherwise.
Yeah, I think this team really desperately needs Chris Middleton back. And not, obviously, the scoring and spreading the floor, but we need to see this team together. And that's the fear that I had going into this season, and this is before we dropped 3 of the first 4 games and 2 of them against teams we probably should have beat.
Yeah, definitely should have beat, yeah.
Yeah, this was the fear I had was, and I know the season's not over. I know it's, what is it, October 28th. The fear I had was digging ourselves a hole and trying to get out of it all year long that the Eastern Conference passes us up. I mean, we talked about it on the pre-show, on the preseason season preview. I mean, the whole Eastern Conference, it feels like, got better. And that's now we're trying to figure out what we are. We're trying to figure out what our identity is.
Yeah.
We're trying to figure out our rotations. And Boston's cruising to 4-0. Cleveland looks like a juggernaut. Indiana's going to give you problems because of their athleticism. I'm not really sure what's going on in Miami. But for the most part, the Knicks, also Karl-Anthony Towns in the offseason, it's not like where we could kind of sleepwalk to the top 3 seed. That was kind of my fear, and I'm sure with most Bucks fans, is that trying to figure out what this team is, and before you try to get an answer, you're 7 games back and it's December or whatever. I mean, and again, hopefully Chris comes back and they're able to get that. But you mentioned it on the network post game. Dave Kane mentioned it. Schedule just gets tougher, man.
855-616-1620, the number to join us tonight on Bucks Talk. I guess it's fair to ask a scale of 1 to 10. What is your level of concern after a 1-3 start? Even if you could make the case, either tonight or Philly, they looked the best, and certainly for 3 quarters tonight. I mean,
agree.
Philly, they look good start to finish, but the big caveat there is, well, there's no Joel Embiid, there was no Paul George. I mean, tonight, they didn't have Kristaps Porzingis, but that was it. And you're good enough for 3 quarters, but the Celtics are not a team you can play less than 48 minutes against. 855-616-1620, the number to join us. More after this on Bucks Talk.
The round ball repartee returns. This is Bucks Talk.
119-108, the final from Boston. The Bucks off to a 1-3 start on the season. Justin Garcia and Brandon Snide here with you on Bucks Talk. 855-616-1620, the number to join us tonight. I feel like we've asked it a couple of times already, but it's probably going to be a fluid number throughout most of the season. You get that sense? You're Your level of concern on a 10-point scale for the Bucks after this one tonight is what? We have talked a bit about the negativity, but I suppose, Brandon, positivity? What stood out or who stood out the most? I know you mentioned one name that we haven't seen a lot of, who got some minutes, what, in the second quarter of this one?
Yeah, yeah.
Would that be
Andre
your guy?
Jackson Jr. Yeah, man. I love that dude. He can be erratic at times. I think he racked up 3 fouls in 8 minutes. But you kind of saw Justin at the end of that Brooklyn game. He's a pest, man. He doesn't have the shot of a Peyton Pritchard, but he's an annoyance.
I mean, that's a massive understatement.
But he has that type of presence on defense. You know, he's just an annoying dude. He's not going to give you any break. He's gonna check you full court. He had the slam tonight that I just think, and he's my positive outlook. I also thought Brooke is in my positive category too tonight.
He's been very good all season long.
I've never said I didn't like Brooke. I just don't like the times and when he decides to take shots. His shot hasn't been good though. I think we can agree on that.
For the season, he's been terrific.
But his
defensively,
defense has been fantastic. I think tonight he had a couple, few buckets in the paint. He did last night as well. So. He's also in my positive outlook. But I think Ajax, man, I just almost 16 minutes out of Pat Connaughton, only 8.5 from Ajax. Justin, I don't know about you,
well,
man.
Well, okay. So
I got to see those flip.
So,
but I also got to see Ajax kind of be under control a little bit and not put himself in the doghouse.
I think there's a lot to it with Andre that complicates it. I thought Pat Connaughton was really good against Philadelphia.
He was, yeah.
I think you're still searching for that performance consistently. But, you know, with Andre, I'm torn because when you see him on the court, you see flashes, and he certainly brings a level of athleticism and intensity that, short of Giannis, I don't know exists on this roster. But the issue is two things with Andre. I mean, number one, he played 8 minutes tonight. He had 4 fouls in those 8 minutes.
Okay, I was short one.
It was a major issue last year. And, you know, part of it is, well, he's a rookie, and it's tough for rookies to get a whistle, that you kind of expect that to be the case. It's still way too much. Like, you cannot, and it was always Bud's thing when he was here, have to defend without fouling. Like, the Bucks were so great at not putting the opponent on the line. And I think it's, you know, what Doc talked about tonight specifically, you know, part of their approach was they were fine with 47 shots from 3 for the Celtics because the plan was, okay, let's wall off the rim. We're not going to give you 2s. We're not going to give you layups. We felt pretty good about some of the 2s that they were taking. And if they take 47 threes, you know, I know it infamously did not work well for Bud in Game 7 in that semifinal series already, 3 years ago? But that's the approach of, look, we know our limitations. We can't stop everything. We can't slow down everything. So let's take this away. If you make 3s, you make 3s. But we feel like we're taking away the most efficient shots. And you did that for stretches, but then it started to show some cracks. And we saw the Celtics with fast break points and getting shots at the rim and layups. And then the 3s started to fall, and then it was just over. With Andre, to go back to that point, I think the recipe for this team is take away the shots at the rim, and don't foul. Now, the latter is going to be a challenge because they are challenged on the perimeter defensively. And if you get beat, I know they had some of those fouls tonight that you can live with because you're staying in it, you're staying aggressive. But you seem to see that a lot with Andre. So that's an issue there. The other big piece is, and I know we saw it tonight, I'll have to go back and see the metrics on the offense. But it's just going to be a challenge to play Andre and Giannis on the floor together. And I think you can look at it and say, well, this is what would make the most sense defensively because of what Giannis brings and because of Andre Jackson Jr.'s athleticism and his ability there. But it's going to be very tough to keep two non-shooters on the floor together for extended periods of time. So that is ultimately going to be the biggest challenge, no matter the good that you see from Andre Jackson Jr. and the bright spots and the flashes of that defensive intensity. Can you sustain it offensively to have him on the floor at the same time as Giannis?
Yeah, and a lot of what you just said is spot on, and that's the frustrating part with Andre, is that a lot of these things that he's causing are his own doing, obviously, and it's unnecessary. Like, it just, I mean, they're just sloppy fouls that, you know, obviously, eight minutes and four fouls. I mean, yes, you're not gonna find the court on that. However, I think there is something there with him. And I think I would, at this point, Justin, I think I would rather take my lumps and work through them. And I know we had last year to work through them too. This year, you know, he came into the league and he's had three head coaches in 1 year. So hopefully maybe he can get kind of, you know, rounded into shape on the defensive side of the ball, because you're spot on. You got to be able to defend and not foul, especially a foul every 2 minutes when you only play 8 minutes. So I just think I would rather take my lumps with Andre Jackson Jr. than I would with Pat Connaughton. I think he just gives me a little bit more. I'll take my, you know, my headaches here and there, but I think he's going to make more of a difference overall than at, well, Pat Connaughton in this stage in his career. Pat Connaughton, you're right. Game one, he was a different player. We haven't seen that from Pat over the last three games.
I mean, the reality is you have to be elite defensively, mm-hmm, in the minutes that Andre Jackson Jr. is on the floor because of the trade-off offensively.
Sure.
And that was not the case a season ago. I don't even want to bring up any numbers from this year, because it's, number one, it's not a lot of minutes that we've seen Ajax. And two, I mean, it's four games total, so it's an incredibly small sample size. But last year, I don't think the defensive metrics matched the eye test that all of us had for Andre Jackson Jr., where you would look at it and you would say, man, this guy makes an impact when he's out there. I'm not denying that, but man, the defense is so much better when he's out there. The Bucks look like a better team. They're more athletic. You know, when you pull up the numbers for it, it didn't necessarily match that. And that's the challenge, is the offense is still not there. And I don't know realistically what the offense is going to be for Andre Jackson Jr. I mean, last year he was basically forced into taking corner threes. We did see the floater tonight on the baseline. I mean, if he can develop that, it's a tool. It's something to put in the arsenal. But also, I mean, that's around the area where you're talking about using Giannis. Like, you can't,
yeah,
that can't be where the offense comes from. So that's ultimately going to be the challenge for Ajax, is offensively, like, where is the strong suit? And again, it's a very small sample size in terms of the minutes he played a year ago, but their defensive rating with Andre Jackson Jr. on the floor was 127.9 last year. I mean, for context, it was in the 120s at its worst point, like a 122, when they were the 21st or 22nd rated defense in the league and Adrian Griffin got fired. So we're talking about numbers that were even worse than that. And that's, again, what you have to be elite. Like, he has to be boosting you. And this isn't just entirely on Ajax, but in those minutes, because of what you know you're going to be lacking offensively, you have to be in the, like, 95th percentile defensively to offset what you're going to be losing. You have to win those possessions on the defensive end. And what we saw last year, again, with the caveat that it wasn't a massive sample size, but what we saw last year was that was not the case. You were just kind of where you had been all throughout the season, and at times even a little worse. So I think that's another one of the challenges where you see these things and you see the athleticism. And look, I get it when people look at that, and it's especially easy to do it if you see a play where maybe Pat Connaughton was late on a rotation or somebody else didn't get a rebound and something that it's, well, throw Andre Jackson Jr. out there. And you know what? At some point, it's probably going to have to be even more seriously considered, depending on what happens from here with a 1-3 record. But I don't think, and I mean this in the nicest way possible. I don't mean this as a knock on Andre. I just don't think it's been Andre Jackson Jr. doing things to warrant that as much as it's been, in relative comparison to the rest of the group, why not? Let's just see what he can do.
I mean, I'm at the point where I'd rather see AJ Green over Pat Connaughton. Where do you stand on that?
I mean, it's interesting. 855-616-1620, the number to join us tonight. So that is one of the more interesting usages we've seen so far this season, especially given that we heard him singled out by John Horse, by this coaching staff in the offseason. Is there more to read into it? Is it simply a roster crunch that is only going to get worse once this team gets healthy? We'll dig into that after this on Bucks Talk. All right, a 1-3 start so far in the season for the Bucks. AJ Green, we saw in garbage time tonight, he hit one of those 8 threes. Had AJ and who was the other one? Marjan, I believe. Have they not hit those late threes?
Oof.
So when would you guess the last time the Bucks made 6 or fewer threes in a game was?
I honestly don't know, but I'm going to rattle off 2014.
Okay, I think 2019.
Okay.
Was the last time they had 6 or fewer, but before that I think it was 2015. So it
okay.
wasn't common, and that's what
so that
they
would
were,
have been the first year under Bud, correct?
19, yeah, it second, was either the first or second. I don't remember what month it occurred in. But yeah, I mean, so it's been a while since they've had that few threes made in a game. Yeah, it is interesting that we haven't seen as much of AJ Green. To me, the big thing about that is, I think it more than anything just speaks to the confidence you have in your two new guards that you acquired in DeLon Wright and Gary Trent Jr. And look, I know if you're just box score hunting, you're probably going to quite, well, what has DeLon Wright even provided? I mean, there hasn't been much offensively. In fairness, you're not bringing DeLon Wright here for his offense. He's going to be a catch and shoot guy on open looks. You're bringing him here for defense. But to me, I think that's the big piece of it because, you know, let's go back to last year when A.J. Green was really carving out those minutes. Pat Connaughton was really struggling. You still had Campaign as your backup point guard, which presented, you know, defensive challenges. He did a good job of organizing the offense, and he could hit threes and score, but he was very limited defensively. And, of course, we've, you know, the elephant in the room, the defensive limitations of Malik Beasley. So I think all of those things converge to open up the door to give A.J. Green those opportunities. Again, not that he did not earn those himself, but that, to me, is what he's up against is, well, we have guys that aren't old guys, you know, like when you brought in Pat Beverly. It's not this old guy. It's not Malik Beasley that's extremely limited defensively. It's not Campaign who doesn't have the size. Like, we feel pretty good about this. And Damian Lillard and the conditioning that he's in. Doc even said tonight he wanted to play the starters longer to, number one, get more of the conditioning there and also knowing we have 2 days off. So I think that's the biggest challenge that he's up against. There's going to be minutes. There's going to be games. There's going to be stretches throughout the season where A.J. Green's going to get those opportunities because of, you know, like tonight when we saw Ajax get that. And it was purely, at least I think, Doc wasn't really asked about it. Torian Prince picked up his third foul. You needed somebody to throw out there and say, well, let's just try to slow them down a little bit. So door opens up for Ajax. There's going to be stretches like that, whether it's an injury, whether it's somebody's just not shooting the ball well for a handful of games. But I think that was always going to be the challenge with every single one of these young guys. Ajax, AJ Green, Marjan, obviously. My guy, Chris Livingston, is a veteran team. And it's a group that we still don't know how Doc Rivers is going to play these guys in terms of minutes, but games played especially. But it's a veteran group that, you know, they can't really afford to say, let's just give these guys the day off. As much as we may want to see that and see the young guys get a chance, what we just talked about, what the Cavs are doing, what the Celtics are doing, the Knicks we think are going to be better, even though they're 1-2 so far. The Pacers are probably going to push you. They're 1-3. You're going to get pushed from all these teams behind you or theoretically behind you in the standings. So you don't have that opportunity. And I think that's the biggest piece of what not just AJ Green, but all the young guys are up against right now, that it may well take an injury for them to really carve out some playing time.
Which you hope isn't the case,
right?
Because then then you're having a different issue. I think it's imperative that whoever is in that spot, and we're talking about the Pat Connaughton role, I mean, I don't want to say like he's lost a step, because I don't want to be harsh about it, because I love Pat Connaughton and love what he's been able to do for this organization. He was a huge part in that 2021 run. It feels like, just eye test, that he's just a step or two behind, and I would roll the dice with a guy like AJ Green, especially on the floor with Giannis, because it felt like last year, even, and I don't have the numbers in front of me, but it felt like when Giannis and AJ Green were on the floor, it became pretty lethal. And you mix in Damian Lillard, and obviously this year you have Gary Trent Jr. and Taurean Prince and some other cast of characters. But I just feel like with Giannis and AJ Green, it's a match made in heaven, you know, from a spreading the floor, so to speak.
You know, so we think that the numbers, and again, it's another one, because he was one of those young guys, it wasn't a whole lot of looks that we got with those two together. It wasn't great. They had a negative net rating with those two on the floor together. It was an offense that was just slightly better than league average. It was a defense that, I mean, it's not AJ Green's fault per se. It was a defense that had a lot of issues last year. It was a defense that wasn't good. But again, it wasn't like it was the same amount of minutes that we saw Giannis and Malik Beasley on the floor together. Memphis Grizzlies, Thursday night. We will take a look ahead to that one, the challenges that that matchup brings. It's a very interesting Memphis team. And, you know, a Memphis team that I'm sure a lot of Bucks fans look at and say, well, why couldn't we get that with some of the young guys that they've developed and started to promote from within now? We'll take a look after this on Bucks Talk. So the Bucks look to avoid a 1-4 start Thursday night in Memphis against the Grizzlies. It's an interesting Memphis team. They have a decent amount of firepower on the perimeter, which, again, it was an issue for moments tonight. And the Celtics are really good on the perimeter. They're going to beat you in that spot. But I think it's the biggest thing that you've circled for the Bucks to say, you know, as we said, Brandon, the moves you made in the offseason, like Gary Trent Jr. is better than Malik Beasley. Taurean Prince is better than Jay Crowder. Delon Wright is better than Pat Beverly. But it's ultimately that level of better. Is it good enough? And that's what we're still searching to find out here. So with Memphis, Ja Morant did not play in tonight's loss, by the way, to the Chicago Bulls, who have beaten the Bucks and the Grizzlies.
Uh-oh.
but you got Desmond Bane, you got Marcus Smart out there. Santi Aldama has been incredible so far to start the season, playing in place of Jaren Jackson early. Jaren Jackson was back in the lineup tonight, but they're still without Brandon Clark. It's a Memphis Grizzlies team that has, you know, for a while it was the Miami Heat and the Toronto Raptors, and now it's kind of becoming the Grizzlies that are doing essentially everything the Bucks need to do, where they're finding these guys that are late draft picks or undrafted guys. They're developing them. The second time in a month today that they upgraded somebody from a two-way contract to a standard contract. And Jay Huff, their big man, who is a seven-footer that's shooting threes now and scoring double digits per game, blocking shots. You add that to the mix with your lottery pick and Zach Edey. They've just found these guys. Scottie Pippen Jr., another one of those guys that was upgraded from a two-way deal to a standard deal. You think back to last year, G.G. Jackson and what he did against the Bucks. So they've done a tremendous job of finding those types of guys, which, you know, as we've said, with the likes of A.J. Green and Andre Jackson Jr. and so on, like that's where the Bucks are kind of at, where you know you're a veteran team, but like the way you sustain that is by sprinkling in some youth with that group, and that's what Memphis has done a pretty good job at. You're going to be challenged on the perimeter once more. I mean, this, you know, the first 10 games, it's not just the record for the opponents from last year that makes it challenging. It's the fact that Tyrese Maxey, the entire perimeter and backcourt of the Boston Celtics is on there. Kobe White and Zach LaVine, you had to go against. Cam Thomas, you went against. You got two games with the Cavs. That means Darius Garland, who was incredible tonight in a win over the Knicks. Donovan Mitchell. The Memphis Grizzlies with Desmond Bane and Ja Morant. You're really going to be challenged. And I think that's a part of why we have said this team is still searching for that third score. The hope, I'm sure, from a lot of Bucks fans was, well, Gary Trent Jr. will be that guy. And I still think you're going to get there with him. I think part of it is what we talked about earlier of there's still some chemistry that has to be worked out between he and Giannis of knowing where should I position myself, where, like, what are the angles Giannis takes? Where is it going to be easier for me to get the ball? And Giannis learning where to look for him. But I think arguably even a bigger piece of that is that schedule. And what you've said, Gary, just like we asked Malik last year, go get him, man. You got to slow these guys down. It's not an easy ask.
I'm just trying to figure out how many three balls is Luke Kennard going to get? What do you think? Five would be the number, over or under that. Because you know, one of these guys off the bench is coming off and having a career high, because that's the type of thing that happens to the Bucks. Not that Peyton Pritchard is that type of player, but it seems like there's always one guy that comes off the bench. And this is a team that played the Bucks tough last year. We didn't beat them last year.
No.
I mean, one of those
They've played the Bucks tough the last few years.
Yeah. And mentioned it, you and I had our tussle about Giannis. I mean, this is probably one of the best teams of defending Giannis. I mean, we only play him twice a year. But, you know, Jaren Jackson Jr. is about as good as it gets down low. So they're going to absolutely have their work cut out for him. Yeah, Justin, I'll be honest with you, man. I feel bad for this Bucks team. I do. I feel bad for myself because I'm a Bucks fan. But like, there's no breaks in this schedule, man. And
not the first 10, yeah.
And it's tough. Like, and I get it. And I think Dave Kane mentioned it. Like, it's kind of good for a team to kind of get tested. I'm kind of against that. I'd rather. But the Bulls and Nets are games you thought they would have won. But I would have loved a little bit easier of a start to the season than Cleveland a few times, Boston a few times, Memphis. I feel bad for them because they're trying to figure things out, and they don't have it. There's no pun intended. There's no layups here with G.G. Jackson, who absolutely dominated the Bucks last year. And I don't know. I know Jaren Jackson Jr. has a Defensive Player of the Year award. I don't know if that was the most recent. But I know he's a stud.
Yeah, the good news, G.G. Jackson is not going to play. He is still dealing with an injury. But it's a Memphis team. So here's the barometer. It's a Memphis team that is in the middle of the pack, albeit through four games, but in the middle of the – or three games, I think. But in the middle of the pack in terms of three-point attempts per game, three-point makes as well. They make 13. And I believe they're in the middle of the pack to the lower third in their three-point percentage.
Oh, now,
Now, the Bucks are actually beneath them in all of those areas. But look, if Memphis comes out and Memphis has a 19 made threes and they're shooting 48%, like, there is such a thing as rough stretches, but you can't start the season with those rough stretches. So, I mean, it's not the NFL where it's not must-win games. Like, your must-win game is the elimination game in the playoffs.
Sure.
But it can't be Chicago. It can't. It absolutely cannot be Brooklyn. You know, especially given what we saw tonight where it looked better. Like, they were in it for three quarters. They certainly were up to the task. And then the Boston Celtics just happened. As Doc said, Peyton Pritchard happened.
Mm-hmm.
You got to build off that because, you know, Dave and I said after game one, going into that Bulls game, consistency is the word of the day. Searching for consistency because you didn't have it last year. So you did something well. Let's build on it and let's stack successes. And you didn't do it. So then you go into the Nets game. You say, okay, consistency. Let's get back to what we did Wednesday and start to build on this. And you didn't do it. I mean, you can make a case. You had some of it tonight, but the result wasn't there. I do think it's important to monitor the process and not just the results. But, I mean, you got to see the process for a majority of time. You mentioned the schedule break, and I know I mentioned there is one piece of optimism. I don't think we got to that. It is part of the schedule. That is where I'm optimistic. We'll get into that discussion, wrap things up as we preview the next one, hoping to avoid a four-game losing streak. We will do that after this on Bucks Talk.
The Round Ball Repartee returns. This is Bucks Talk.
All right, we mentioned the Memphis Grizzlies Thursday night. And that schedule. So the piece of optimism that I have, I mean, maybe you could say I'm clinging to, is how difficult it is now, the struggles and the challenges that this team is going through. In some ways, it's the opposite of a year ago where you played, I don't recall offhand what its actual ranking was, but it was among the top three easiest schedules in the league through those first 43 games. And it drastically changed in the second half. So, I mean, I do think it's painfully evident that this team won on talent through those first 40-plus games last season. I mean, they were in games, close ones, that shouldn't have been close. It's a different story this year where obviously it's incredibly difficult if we just go off the win percentage for your opponents for the first 10 games a year ago, fourth toughest in the league. The final month of the season, March especially, is very tough. So it's everything in between that is where you need to really take advantage and you need to kind of be coming into your own. That, I think, the difference there is where I am optimistic in this turnaround. And again, you know, Doc Rivers after the game talking about the process of tonight and what he saw from the team. We ran out of gas tonight, didn't get a lot of help from the bench. We have 2 days off, though, so you know, playing our starters, it worked in our favor there. And just the losing streak, you want to win every game, but I don't think there's anything significant. We played two horrible games. There's no excuse for that, but it does happen. We played relatively well, but just couldn't sustain that tonight. Our guys like where we're going, and I know we heard that last year, and I know it's going to be a tough sell because of that and because of the 1-3 record, but I do think there is truth to that. Mm-hmm. And I also think as you get healthy, as you take your lumps, you start to move in the right direction because this is still going to be a work in progress with some aspects of a new defense and Greg Buchner, new pieces to work in, changes you know, offensively even, that we've already seen through four games, it's still going to take some time. And the fact that Doc Rivers himself has said, we're still not fully running everything we're going to run because Chris Middleton isn't on the floor. And we're kind of saving that for when Chris is out there. If you can get through that and you're not in the worst spot possible, if this isn't a 1-9 start that we're talking about, and you can just hang on and get through that, and then the schedule starts to lighten up, and then theoretically you get healthy and you start to peel off wins and you start to build your confidence and you start to move this in the right direction, by the time the schedule picks up again towards the end of the season, in theory, you're healthy, you've developed more of that chemistry, you have more of a track record to point to of, look, here's how it worked. Here's X amount of games, 20 or so, that we've had with this new system offensively and defensively, that it's not we feel, we know this is headed in the right direction. And I do think that is more beneficial to have now than last year, where, I mean, if you could make an argument, look, what they did was fool's gold because the process wasn't great and the opponents that you're playing, it wasn't tough. We saw what happened once it did get difficult. So that, to me, is the big difference and why it's important to just tread water. And as you're figuring this out and not healthy, just, you know, 5-5, 4-6 at this point, if you're 1-3, you'll certainly take, like, do that. And then as you start to reintroduce these pieces and get an easier schedule, then you can start to make a bit of a charge.
I think tonight, Justin, as negative as I feel like I have been for these first three or these last three games, I think tonight was something that you could build off of. I do.
Yeah, I mean, look, I said last night, I expect they're going to win. That's kind of what we've seen from this team.
Yeah.
And for 2.5 quarters, you felt like, they're going to do it.
Yeah, until Pritchard hit that three at the end of the third quarter, which is another one of my pet peeves. I think we talked about it in the Philly game, even though they won. It's just the end of the quarter bucket. Mm-hmm. Just, God, it drives me nuts. And it drove Doc Rivers nuts. I think he had his hands on his knees and bent over after
In fairness, they got one themselves, too.
They did. Gary Trent Jr. rattled that one in. Yeah, it's a loss, and I know you and I are going to have a philosophy indifference with Giannis, but I think we both can agree that I think this team, when they play the way that we think they're capable of playing, can compete with anybody. Boston's a superior, talented team compared to most of the NBA.
Yeah,
like that, and they were right there with them all night. I anticipate them. The Bucks are only going to get better from here on out, and I'm encouraged at least tonight to see that this was. I mean, they could have easily walked in there in the second leg of a back-to-back, Justin, and got blown out by 30, and nobody would have really said anything.
I still choose to remain optimistic until we see this team at full strength and see extended periods of this just doesn't look right. Like, when that happens, okay, then we can have that conversation. We haven't seen it yet. So you do need to see Chris Middleton on the floor and how this team looks when they're healthy, because they were one of the best in the league last year when they had those five guys together in their starting five. Thursday night, 7 o'clock in Memphis, 6:30 is when our pregame coverage begins on the Bucks Radio Network and WTMJ. And as always, we'll have Bucks talk after the game. Hopefully, we're not talking about a four-game losing streak. We will talk to you once again Thursday night.